This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. What makes a city a healthy one? The Mercantile Library explores how the built environment changes life choices and even lifespan in the upcoming talk, The Healthy City. It's part of an ongoing series, The Case for Cities. This virtual conversation is free. It takes place this evening. We've got details at WVXU.org. I spoke earlier with the three panelists, and here is our recorded conversation. And joining us now to talk about the healthy city, creating healthy neighborhoods, and supporting healthy people are Dr. Sagar Shah. He is the manager of planning and community health at the American Planning Association. Sagar, thank you for being with us.
Thank you. Glad to be there with you.
And we also have with us Dr. Emmanuel Frimpong-Boma. He is an assistant professor in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Buffalo. Emmanuel, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Michael, for having me.
And Dr. Nisha Bochwe, associate professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. Nisha, thank you for being with us as well.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here.
Sagar, I'd like to start with you. The healthy city. It sounds like a simple term that maybe someone not skilled in this line of work could offer up an improvised definition for, but I assume it must mean something specific. Could you enlighten us?
Yeah, sure. Great question to start with, actually. For planners and a lot of allied professionals, we look at healthy city as in all people having equal opportunity to make choices that make good health. And when we say health, generally people think about physical health, but we are talking about physical plus mental health. So the importance on the word all is very important, that everybody has opportunity to equal equal opportunity to good choices. And generally people think about health and in terms of walking, biking, eating healthy food, etc. There is, in public health, there is a concept called social determinants of health, which means there are so many factors that affect public health or health of people. And I will give an example. So it's not only healthy eating and walking, biking, or physical activity. It's also about whether people have access to good jobs, whether people have affordable and quality housing to live in. Do people have feel safe in their neighborhoods while walking or biking? What is the quality of education they get? So there are so many factors that affect health. And when there is the balance and when all people have access to all this opportunity in an equal way, we can say we have a healthy city.
Let me turn now to Emmanuel, because we're seeing a return to urban areas as people find the lifestyle to be more exciting. A lot of companies are returning to the urban cores across the country, and that's certainly true here in Cincinnati, where we've seen a great renaissance in our urban core. How are cities capitalizing on focusing on being healthy cities in order to keep that momentum going?
Well, thank you so much, Michael, for that question. For us as urban planners, again, building on what Saga talked about, when we think of healthy cities, we're also talking about the material and immaterial resources needed for individuals to live healthy and lively lifestyles within the cities. Now, over time, we are seeing instances where different kinds of innovations are being put forward by different cities to ensure that we are maximizing the full potential or our full health potential in cities. That includes more pedestrian-friendly neighborhoods, trying to improve on food accessibility within neighborhoods, and especially within historically marginalized, racially marginalized neighborhoods in our cities. So these are some of the activities that we are seeing coming up over time, both pedestrian friendliness, food systems, water accessibility are some of the issues that we are finding or some of the innovations that we are finding in cities. But over time, one of the things that we are also realizing is that there's also a disproportionate disparity in the access of these kinds of innovations or innovative systems that we are putting in place to ensure more healthy cities. And for us as urban planners and architects, we are trying to retrace our steps back to the fundamental question about how have we ensured that different population groups are having access to healthy options in their neighborhood. How do we, or how have we engineered our built environment in ways that has improved accessibility to food, water, and housing options, especially among low-income and racial minorities? And then more importantly, this is something that is not really on the agenda of most cities. How do we shift public policies to ensure that health outcomes are used to determine how we invest taxpayers' money? So these are, we see these innovations coming up, but there's still some questions that we have to deal through in terms of disparities in access to some of these innovative ideas that we see in cities.
Dr. Nisha Bochwe is an associate professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. And Nisha, I understand that your area of expertise is in community health and the built environment, as well as in community engagement. So to that end, can you tell us a little bit about how the public is, if they are even, becoming more aware of the importance of the environment in terms of their overall community health?
Well, that's, you know, that's a great question again. And what comes to mind is really kind of what it means to be kind of healthy and live. And that is kind of your length of life and overall how well that life is. If you take a look at life expectancy scores across the US, but perhaps specifically for Cincinnati, relative to Ohio, people can expect to live a life that's about 76 and a half years in Ohio. In Cincinnati, it's just a little less. But when you drill down to the neighborhoods in Cincinnati, the span of life is about 25 years. So for instance, the Lower Price Hill or Queensgate neighborhood, people there, based on these life expectancy charts, can expect to live about 63 years on average. Whereas those in the Mount Adams community can expect to live 88 years. That's a 25-year span in the same city. Now, you know, your question, Michael, on, you know, how are people getting engaged? You know, I think people are really quite mindful of what resources are available in their communities. Are there good parks for their kids to walk to and play in? Are the parks safe? Are there grocery stores and full service grocers around? And how do they make sure that those resources are available to them? City planners can be quite good at engaging communities and making sure that they not only have access to jobs and affordable housing, but they have access to the kind of soft side or perhaps the essential pieces that make community life vibrant and high quality. In these kind of resources in your spaces that allow you to truly thrive in your community and not just live. And so how are people getting engaged? They're going to community meetings, they're tapping into the Zoom activities, but everyone's not doing that. Community engagement is not as evenly distributed as we hope it would be. So all of the voices are not as representative as we would like.
Dr. Bochwe, I'd just like to follow up because you offered some pretty chilling statistics there about our city here in Cincinnati, comparing the lifespan of residents of certain neighborhoods compared to residents in other neighborhoods. Queensgate and Mount Adams, for example, a shorter lifespan in Queensgate, a longer one in Mount Adams, which does tend to be a more affluent neighborhood. So that's the obvious stat that sticks out is that Mount Adams has more expensive housing and probably higher income individuals living there compared to the west end of town where you find Queensgate. What specifically impacts that quality of life, that length of life in those neighborhoods? I'm just curious about, is it just, the opportunity that comes with being better off economically?
So that's a very big part of it. So when you think about this notion of embodiment, which is kind of framed in the social determinants of health that was previously referred to, those social determinants of health really outline kind of that where you live, work, play, are born. There's a compounding of the experiences in your environment that are embodied in your person. And, you know, often we talk about health as a kind of snapshot, a time snapshot, but it's not necessarily just that one point in time. There's a compounding impact of What you eat for breakfast, how much you move during the day, how supportive you feel in your community. Are you subject to racism, and how does that impact your mental and physical well-being? And over time, those things really compound. Are you able to feel secure in your housing? Do you have affordable housing? Are you spending more than 33% of your income on housing? And how is that impacting all of the other life components that you have to navigate? And so, you know, to be healthy doesn't just mean that you have the financial resources to be able to pay for the healthcare or to be able to secure the food and the physical activity and the spaces that are safe for those activities. But there's also a social component. So we can think about vibrant communities across the globe that I'm sure a number of my colleagues here on the call can point to, where people are vibrant, they're living, they're thriving, and they don't have the same set of material resources that, you know, the Mount Adams community or the Mount Outlook community have, but their relationships and the support that exists there are quite significant. I mean, think about some of our developing nations where the social capital that exists there allow for those communities to support one another such that they're much more resilient after a disaster like a hurricane or an earthquake. So, you know, there are the material side that is really critical, but there's also the social aspect that is important in addition to kind of the time and the compounding of these impacts for the different communities.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking today about the latest installment in the Case for Cities series organized by the School of Planning at the University of Cincinnati and hosted by the Mercantile Library. This upcoming event is The Healthy City, Creating Healthy Neighborhoods and Supporting Healthy People. It is this evening, Wednesday, November 18, from 7:30 to 9 o'clock. Details on how to watch at WVXU.org. Our guests today talking about this are a couple of the participants in this program. Sagar Shah, he is a PhD and manager at Planning and Community Health for the American Planning Association. Sagar, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
And we also have with us Dr. Emmanuel Frimpong Boma. He's an assistant professor in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Buffalo. Dr. Boma, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Michael.
And you just recently heard Dr. Nisha Bochwe, an associate professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. Nisha, thank you for being with us.
Thanks, Michael.
Let me return to you, Sagar, and building on what we heard Nisha say about some of the specific neighborhoods here in Cincinnati, which some people may be surprised by, some people may not be surprised by. What can you tell us about the way Cincinnati is or isn't a healthy city?
Oh, thank you for asking that question, Michael, because my journey, I work a lot at the intersection of urban planning and public health. And my journey to that particular, where I am right now, started in Cincinnati when I was studying there. I do remember Hamilton County Public Health, along with 11 of our partners, we got a funding from the CDC.
Yeah, it's the Centers for Disease Control. Gotcha.
Yeah, I always forget the. And we talk in so many abbreviations that forget the full form.
Sure.
So we got the funding from CDC, and we started working on two aspects in Hamilton County, specifically access to healthy food and access to physical activity locations so that people can eat healthy food and thus be healthy, and people can do physical activity, and that's how they can get healthy. And I do remember the strength of that particular program that started in Cincinnati, I think around 2009, 2010, was the collaboration between different academic institutions, government agencies, as well as nonprofit organizations or community-based organizations. So we had collaborations between like Cincinnati Children's, Hamilton County Public Health, of course, was leading the effort. We had Nutrition Council, and then we had YMCA of Greater Cincinnati, a lot of partners coming together. And of course, University of Cincinnati, where I was studying. coming together to create this healthy environment. And we are proud of the work we have done. Hamilton County, having talked with CDC afterwards in my current role, I feel that we did a really good job in terms of helping people move the needle on obesity, which was the main focus of the program. But I would also say that in terms of what Nisha was talking about and Emmanuel focused a little bit about equity, I think there is clear segregation within type of people living in different neighborhoods. And if we plot, for example, the socioeconomic characteristics versus health outcomes in Cincinnati, you will see a strong correlation between affluent areas and good health, and a strong correlation between people who, well, the poverty level is high and the health outcomes are not that great. So there is sort of that type of thing that is happening in Cincinnati and in many, many urban areas throughout the country, as we know. So that is one thing. Another thing I wanted to mention a little bit talking about mental health was gentrification and the displacement that happens because of gentrification, right? So we have downtown Cincinnati, especially over the Rhine neighborhood, where there has been a lot of development, good development. It's improved the built environment. That planners really like in terms of we have mixed use, we have good sidewalks that people can walk on, etc. It is very important to focus on the other aspect, which is what happened to the people that used to live there, right? Were they displaced, or where did they get the opportunity to live in the same neighborhood in an affordable way? So in addition to all the good things happening in the Cincinnati, I think it's very important that we focus on issues such as gentrification, because it is directly connected, or displacement. Let me clarify. It's not gentrification. It's more sort of displacement and the effect that has on people's physical and mental health. So I would just emphasize the good things that Cincinnati has done and we have done in last at least 10, 15 years. But there are also some consequences or unintended consequences that may not be very, that may not help the health of the people.
Dr. Emmanuel Frimpong-Boma is an assistant professor at the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Buffalo. And Emmanuel, I'm curious about the impact of COVID-19 on your type of scholarly work in this field that we're discussing now, urban planning and community health. I mean, this is a global health crisis, the likes of which we've certainly not seen in our lifetimes. And we know that even here in Cincinnati, as has played out across the country, that poorer people and Black people in particular have been hit hard disproportionately by this pandemic. What do you think we're learning by way of COVID-19 about the way our communities are set up?
All right. Thank you so much, Michael. That is a very important question, which I'm sure most of your audience or listeners would like to listen to. I think globally, we are seeing that COVID really revealed some of the entrenched inequities that we see in our society. And these are things, again, I must say that these are things that most people, especially scholars of color, have kept on talking to us about, that we are having instances where we are having this double burden of poverty and inequalities that are experienced by certain segments of our population. The way we design our housing makes it easier for some of these contaminants or for some of these diseases to easily spread. The way we've designed our different neighborhoods also makes it difficult for certain individuals to have access to quality food and water systems. These are things that we already knew, but this is exactly what COVID made us more aware of, hopefully. Now, in terms of specific lessons that I think we are going to learn from this COVID pandemic, it is something that I think is a question that most scholars are asking about when it comes to especially sub-Saharan Africa. The question is, how did sub-Saharan Africa really manage to do well in this whole COVID instances? Well, some of the answers we are actually finding is that they basically are saying to the rest of the world that we learned from how our built environment was shaped and then how these built environment characteristics made it easier for Ebola to spread in some of our communities. So as a result of this learning, when COVID happened, what was happening in some of these communities in sub-Saharan Africa is that most of them started bringing together some of the different infrastructures that they've developed over time when to deal with the Ebola epidemic to try to deal with the COVID. That actually required leadership. Strong leadership is very important when it comes to dealing with some of these epidemics. And that is something that hopefully COVID is going to remind us about, that leadership is very important when it comes to response to some of these pandemics or epidemics. Again, strong local support is something that we also need, which often comes from this social capital that Nisha kept talking about. In the United States, we saw instances where we had community groups rising up and then dealing with some of the different shortfalls that we had in terms of food access. So this is something that also we learned during the COVID pandemic. Moving forward, I think we have to start thinking more broadly in terms of how do we start learning from each other and from the past in order to build a much more resilient and healthy future. And again, this will require us thinking broadly and not also and also understanding that to plan for the future when it comes to pandemic is also to understand that we don't necessarily want to wish it away, or we don't have to plan cities as though we are wishing pandemics away. We have to learn to plan with cities within some of these crises in order to better understand how to deal with some of these services that often became a problematic issue during this pandemic. And that is something that also hopefully we learned from this pandemic and we are going to build more upon going forward.
Dr. Nisha Bochwe is an associate professor of city and regional planning at Georgia Tech. And in our last minute together, Dr. Bochwe, I'd just like to ask a very similar question. What do you anticipate the impact of COVID-19 will be on your line of work, you know, the study of this field and the way it's implemented professionally?
Thanks, Michael. You know, COVID has had such a disproportionate impact, as you've noted already, on poor and minority communities. The devastation in these subpopulations of people who've been lost to the disease is quite striking. And so as a city planner with a focus on public health and public health promotion, I'm really keen to the ways that the power of planning can respond to this pandemic in particular ways. So for instance, thinking about community design for physical activity, having parks that are not closed, but actually are open and allow for people to wear masks and socially distance and engage, I think is a really important way to move forward. Closing streets that are, you know, that have low traffic on them these days, because people are staying home and socially distancing, allows people to actually get out and bike more and be safer. What are some of the ways that we think about addressing concerns with vulnerable populations like the elderly, who are in many respects in naturally occurring retirement communities where they own homes, they're staying in those homes, and because of COVID, they're left on their own. Are there ways that we can promote food delivery and other types of services that support this community, especially in this time? And so, you know, as a city planner, and I think I speak for my colleagues on the call as well, we are not just thinking about the physical infrastructure of cities. We are quite mindful that health is physical and mental, and that as planners, we really have the power to allow for communities to be engaged in changing the dynamic in their spaces so they can be healthy. And that's our goal, is to create healthy communities for all populations.
That's Dr. Nisha Bochwe, Associate Professor of City and Regional Planning at Georgia Tech. We've also been joined today by Dr. Sagar Shah. He is the Manager of Planning and Community Health at the American Planning Association. And Dr. Emmanuel Frimpong Boma. He is an Assistant Professor in the Department of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of Buffalo. All three are conversationalists at this evening's installment of The Case for Cities, The Healthy City: Creating Healthy Neighborhoods, Supporting Healthy People. This is a series organized by the School of Planning at the University of Cincinnati and hosted by the Mercantile Library of Cincinnati. You can find details and the free registration information at wvxu.org inside the Cincinnati Edition tab. It should be an enlightening conversation. It starts at 7:30. Doctor, thanks to all three of you for being with us. We do appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Michael.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer of today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Our theme music is composed by Rob Fetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.